The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to the Kiefer and Curry. He's Kip Kiefer. He's the executive director of the Birmingham Racecourse Casino, an all-around king of media. I think I can say you now are the king of media. He does terrestrial radio. He does terrestrial television. He's on internet. He's on Tony Curry Radio. If there's a place to put his mouth, he puts it. Is that safe?
I sit in occasionally in Las Vegas on sports shows.
Occasionally, yes. I'm Tony Curry. Go ahead. Did you say something? You want to say something?
Yeah. I just whatever comes up, you know. Can you fill in for Congressman Doug Collins on his podcast? Sure. Why not?
Absolutely. Hey, you know what? There is nothing wrong with being a fill-in, though. I've been filling in my entire life, and there are some people that are just great fill-ins because next thing you know, it could turn into who was it that used to fill in for Jay Leno? Was it Joan Rivers? Who was it? Who to get the job because they filled in so much? So it happens. It happens.
Yeah, David Letterman was Johnny Carson's fill-in, and he parlayed that into his show. Yeah.
Speaking of filling in, you and I talked last week about movies we like to share with our kids. We were talking about the Naked Gun movie.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen it yet. I don't know if you've seen it out. I don't like when
movies... I think it starts Friday.
Yeah, Happy Gilmore 2. Are you in or out?
It must not be very good because I think they're releasing it straight to. I don't think it's going to be in theaters.
It's not. See, this is either like Amazon Prime NFL Thursday thing,
yeah.
or the movie's just going to suck. Yeah. And I'm assuming since it's an Adam Sandler movie, and the first Happy Gilmore obviously it was so bad it was funny, it was hilarious, and of course it's a cult classic now.
Yeah.
So if you saw the first one, you will definitely go see. Even my daughter, who's 13, she's like, "Are we going to see Happy Gilmore?" And I'm like, "Did you even?" She said, "I thought the first one was hilarious." That's like, "You saw the first one?
That's hilarious.
Do you even know who Bob Barker is?" I mean, so what are you talking about?
If she saw that when she was like 10 years old and thought it was funny, then I have great respect for you, young lady.
We're good to go. Coming out September 3rd, Spinal Tap 2. The End Continues, it's called. Spinal Tap 2, it's going to have Christopher Guest, Mike McKeon, Harry Shearer. Rob Reiner is going to be producing the movie. I thought Rob Reiner was dead.
Oh, boy.
So he's going to be on it. So Spinal Tap 2 is coming out here. Also on top of that, there was a very interesting billboard that went up in L.A. this past week with a picture of Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham. And, of course, the picture was her topless behind him. You can remember the picture from, of course, that brought us Frozen Love, Buckingham Nicks. She wrote on her Instagram, "If you go forward, ... He then put on his Instagram message, "I'll meet you there." So he completed her sentence. So everyone's like, whoa, and it says, "Coming September 19th. What are we talking about? Is Buckingham Nicks getting back together again? Is Fleetwood Mac getting together again? What's happening? I don't know. But we do know for a fact they're reissuing Buckingham Nicks, that CD. And, of course, that thing was
huge. How about that?
That thing was huge here for some reason in Birmingham, Alabama. I'm not sure why.
I remember that. They had more sales here than any place else in the country.
Yeah. I never knew why.
No sense. Did Buckingham Nicks play here and just develop a huge audience?
I have no idea.
It's hard for me to imagine that back in 1975 or whatever. Yeah. I don't know.
I have no idea. I that's a great question. And info@tonycurryradio.net. If you know the answer to that, I don't know if they played a concert here. I don't know. But for some reason, we sold more.
They almost have. They must have, Tony. How else would that have happened? They weren't even known by anybody at that point.
Mm-mm, no. And that was.
I think Buckingham Nicks came out like in 73.
Yeah.
Because they joined Fleetwood Mac by 75 or 6.
Yeah. Yeah. They were already kind of getting their feet wet, and they kind of knew each other. And of course, we all know about that love affair that went on.
Yeah. They really knew each other too for a while.
No doubt.
One of the stormiest couples of all time. Because you talk about hot and cold.
And there's something there's something I like to believe. Just because I think it makes for a great story, but I love to bet that she had a love affair with Don Henley. I'd love to think maybe she had a love affair with Kenny Loggins. I'd love to think that she had a love affair with anyone she ever did a record with. Yeah,
well,
because I mean,
supposedly in Mick Fleetwood's autobiography, he talks about spending 2 weeks with her in Hawaii,
yeah,
getting busy.
she was
And
quite
Mick
the
Fleetwood was about the weirdest guy of all time. Come on, Stevie.
Can you, isn't it amazing though that the band is called Fleetwood Mac and really people don't even realize that there's a guy named Mick Fleetwood? I mean, young fans don't even know that Fleetwood Mac, they just think
Nope.
it's the name of a band. They don't even realize there's a guy named Mick Fleetwood. So somehow, I don't know how he ended up retaining the rights to the name of the band.
Yeah,
The
and
band's
Fleetwood
always been
Mac had
called
been
Fleetwood Mac.
around for 12 years before Stevie and Lindsey. They had gone through all kinds of different changes, and I think they had 9 or 10 albums out already before they even joined. And the band was semi-successful, but Mick Fleetwood was the constant in all of that.
Of course, John McVie and Christy McVie were part of that as well. Also, coming out before they get inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, it's finally going to happen. Bad Company is going to go in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I'm glad to hear that.
They're having an all-star tribute album come out just before. And Paul Rodgers, of course, the lead singer for Bad Company, has just announced that he's going to be part of that, which makes
Nice.
sense. It's nice. If you're doing a tribute album, you like to think that the lead singer is going to be on the thing. And so that's great news. It's going to be called Can't Get Enough. And so far people in the industry are saying they're quietly impressed with Slayer is going to be on it. I think Foreigner's doing a song. They're going to have just an incredible lineup of great rock and
Nice.
rollers. And that album is dropping on October 24th. Def Leppard is going to be on it. Slash is going to be on it. So it should be kind of fun. So I want to ask Kip Kiefer, because I mean, we talk a lot of sports. We do that on our ABC thing. We talk a lot of politics on your show. I love talking rock and roll with you because you're the one guy that can actually carry your own junk when you're talking about rock and roll. There's one guy that's got underwear almost as large as mine, and that's Kip Kiefer, and I love that. I appreciate that.
Yeah, but let's be fair. Tony Curry's forgotten more about rock and roll than I
Oh, come
know.
on,
I
stop
know
it.
about rock and roll of people and bands that I like. I don't have the knowledge that you have, but I can speak intelligently about my
Yes, you
era.
can.
So that's it, because I to this day, there's hardly a single day where I don't allocate at least a half hour or even it was like an hour and a half last night because nothing was going on, where I go set up my lounge chair outside, put my headphones on,
Yeah,
and go
man.
listen to classic rock. And
There
I
you go.
it's like my escape. It's my favorite thing of my entire
You
day.
get classic rock and not one, but two Kip Kiefer shows. If you just get the TKR app, baby, you get it back to back. I get Kip Kiefer, I get Need to Know, and Kiefer and Curry, which, by the way, I love. It's one of my favorite shows because I'm on it with you. And then, of course, you get classic rock around the clock. So great stuff. Then, of course, you had the story come out this past week that Phil Collins is in hospice. His representatives are saying it's not true. He did go in for knee surgery, but they say he's not going to die. Of course, he just got done doing this thing. I guess it was maybe 2, 3 years ago when Genesis got back together again in the UK. They did some shows where he had to sit during the entire show. And then, of course, we go back to the Black Sabbath show, which just happened 4 weeks ago this Saturday. And we know that Ozzy Osbourne's life was taken away from us just last week. So I want on the show today, and I don't care how you take this. You can dig people up. You can dig them up from the dead if you want, or you can do it when I'm still alive. I want to know who Kip Kiefer would like to see get back together again while they're still alive in rock and roll. And it could be like, say, for example, if Jackson Browne was no longer touring anymore, you could bring him back. You could say, listen, he's not touring anymore, but I know he still is. But so he could be a single guy too. Someone that's still alive that you would love to see get back on the stage with their old bandmates, with themselves. I will start right now by saying that I would love to see the Police get back together again. I'd love to see
Oh
Stu,
man,
Stuart
they would be high
Copeland,
on my list.
and Summer, and because the three of the guys are still left, I think that would be fantastic. I'd love to see the members of Triumph get back together again. I think it'd be fun to see those guys because Rick Emmett is still singing his nads off. A band that I really wanted to see get back together again, and unfortunately, it's now too late because two of the biggest members are gone, Benjamin Orr and Rick Ocasek. But I would have loved to see the Cars get together one more time before they start kicking the boots. But all these bands start. I don't want to take all the bands bands, because I know you're going to have several, but give me some bands, give me some individuals you love to see get back on the road again. Of course, I also mentioned Lou Gramm, of course, is now back with Foreigner. Some people are saying that's a good thing, obviously, because he's the lead singer, but they're saying the guy who sang before him was actually singing better than Lou was. So yeah, give me some bands, give me some info, give me some things you'd love to see come back. Go.
Well, I guess it's sad, because the two or three popped in my mind right away are bands that have lost major cogs, just like you mentioned. A couple of the best shows that I've ever seen, and the show last year that I was lucky enough to see at the Sphere, the Eagles, without Glenn Frey, was made up for by the fact that they had his son, who did a really good job on several of the Glenn Frey vocal songs, but it just wasn't the same.
If you closed your eyes and didn't know Glenn Frey had died, would you have known?
He had a distinctive style in a lot of those Eagles songs, and one of my, you know, one of the most commercially successful that a lot of people don't know, because we talked about at length that I'm a huge Jackson Browne fan. Did you know that Don Henley and Glenn Frey actually rented a house in L.A. back in like the early 70s, and a young aspiring up and coming musician, might have been in the late 60s, 21-year-old Jackson Browne rented the basement and set up shop down there. That's how they met.
Isn't that incredible?
And Jackson Browne was writing songs and playing. Glenn Frey said he was a terrible roommate, because at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, he was still down there making noise, and we finally had to tell him, you know, at midnight, dude, you got to shut it down. Yep. So of course, most of the time we were still up, you know, till daylight, so it was fine. One of the songs that's completely different without Glenn Frey, the Eagles took a Jackson Browne song, "Take It Easy," and Jackson Browne had been trying to come up with a way to finish that song for a long time, and Glenn Frey finally said, "Let me see that thing." And Glenn Frey, in one night, wrote the last verse or the lines that kind of connected it, and so Jackson gave the Eagles permission to record that before he even did. Jackson Browne's version is completely different than the Eagles, and the way Glenn Frey sings it is completely different than it was performed at that show at the Sphere.
Yeah, have you heard, did Jackson Browne play "Take It Easy"? He does. He used to play it in concert. The last time you saw him, did he play it?
No. Okay. He has played it when he was on his solo acoustic tour a couple years ago. He did play it, and an acoustic version of it's really good, because a lot of Jackson Browne songs, that's the origin of them, because he still has a whole line of electric and acoustic guitars. When you see him on that solo tour, and I don't know if he'll ever do another one again, he's got a rack, Tony, of at least 30 guitars, and he plays a different one on virtually every single song. Right. So that's how specialized his guitar mastery is. But Eagles made that a mega hit, you know. Yeah. "Take It Easy" by the Eagles. People don't even realize Jackson Browne wrote that song.
That's something where you and I certainly have some crossing there, because one of the most incredible interviews I ever had was with Jackson Browne. It went on so long. I had to flip the tape over twice.
And he says, "Wait a minute, dude, aren't you just erasing what we just did?"
I just recorded over the same thing. And I don't think I even played it. And I would give anything to find that cassette tape of Jackson Browne.
I would pay you big money for that.
It was right after the Daryl Hannah situation. I was told not to ask any questions about that. I didn't have to. He went off on it and talked about it. But we sat there for almost an hour and 15 minutes backstage, and they were like, "Jackson, you got to go, man. It's time to go." And he's like, "Okay." And he'd get up and he'd sit back down again. Hey, while we're talking about him, and that's why I love doing the show, because we can do whatever the hell we want. Tell me some other people that Jackson Browne has collaborated with that perhaps I wouldn't know. I mean, obviously Linda Ronstadt, I'm thinking, has been a big part of that, because she actually played with the Eagles and part of the backup band. But give me some collaborations that Jackson Browne's had that I maybe would not know.
The one guy that never really got, and I'm sure you're probably familiar with him, he just passed away 2 years ago, which was devastating because always the mainstay in every Jackson Browne show was David Lindley, who was one of the most amazing guitarists. Played that, what
Amen.
is it? I always get this screwed up. What's the funky guitar you actually sit down to play? They have somebody, something string guitar. My music knowledge is really bad.
Slide guitar, or I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but he all those kind of twangy, sounds and stuff. David Lindley was like his, just like Dan Fogelberg's, and he did an album, Twin Sons from Different Mothers. His guy was Tim Weisberg, who was like they were joined at the hip for all those years that Fogelberg toured. Of course, he's gone as well. I don't know if Tim Weisberg is still alive, but Jackson collaborated on different tours with different people. I know he was with, and these are not household names, but I know he had Keb Mo with him a lot, who was a nominally successful artist. He had a guitarist that was seemed like he played in tours. All I think you had this specialist of people that would kind of go out on the road and play these big tours. The guys I just remember, the guy was named Waddy Waddell, and he played like on every like big album and every big tour. Are some of the names that are popping in my head. But Jackson usually for every kind of band tour seemed like he rounded up a different cast of characters, except for David Lindley, just about every time. So, I really not a lot of people that come to mind that were, really household names that I actually saw him perform with. I know on albums that he had a lot of collaborations with, all the bigger names out there, but never not really identified. He was always kind of a lone wolf.
That would be the lap steel guitar you're talking about,
That,
and
yeah.
it makes sense, obviously. That I'm sitting here looking at concerts because every time you bring up Jackson Browne, because the last time I saw Jackson Browne was, oh, shit, 25 years ago, probably was that show at Oak Mountain Amphitheater, and I never thought in a million years that'd be the last time I saw him play. Just because it was he was not one of those shows that showed up every single year, but he was getting close. Now I'm thinking to myself, maybe I need to go get a chance. He's actually playing the Beacon Theater in New York, coming up a little bit later on in August. Wow, he's got a run of shows at the Beacon Theater, up in New York and
Yeah,
Humphreys.
he's doing more of that residency kind of stuff. That's how I was able to see him last year in Las Vegas at a 1500 seat at the Venetian Theater, which was tiny, tiny. But he did, they were charging an arm and a leg for a ticket, and he did seven shows in about a 10-day period. I think he's getting more into that than being on the road and touring like he had been right up till a couple years ago.
Oh, here you go. Coming up here now. Listen to me here. This could be a Kip Key for Tony Curry show. Shoal Fest with Jackson Browne, Jason Isbell, and the 400 Unit, Waxahachie, and many more. It's a 2-day pass, October 11th and 12th, Saturday and Sunday, McFarland Park in Florence, Alabama.
No kidding. I'm going to be in Vegas that week, but I'm scheduled to come home. If he's playing on the 12th, I'm in.
I know exactly where McFarland Park is too, in Florence,
Oh,
Alabama.
I've
Shoal
never
Fest,
been
yeah.
there. Is that up by like Muscle
It
Shoals?
is. It is.
Because Muscle Shoals is, and you probably can speak expertly on this. I've always been fascinated.
Oh
That is
man.
like one of the biggest music factories in the entire country.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Everybody plays there, right?
I mean, everyone. Well, everyone wants to play there. Everyone.
Because
Everyone had.
like
Everyone had a
it's,
record done there. Everyone had a
yeah,
record done.
yeah. That's the ultimate
Stones,
studio,
Elvis. Yeah,
right?
you name it. Fleetwood Mac getting back together again. That'd be kind of fun. Certainly without Christy McVie, I
Yeah,
think
we
it'd be kind
lost
of
Christy
difficult.
and I. John McVie had cancer. I guess he's overcome that. Is Mick still alive? Mick's got to be 85.
Dude, Mick chimed in after they dropped that Instagram post and said, "I'm all in. Just let me
No
know because
kidding.
he wants to play, and Stevie wants to play." Stevie was the one that was pushing everything through COVID, saying, "Listen, we got to get this shit fixed," because
Yeah.
she wanted to get back on the road. And of course, she just played a show up in Huntsville. I want to say it was a year ago, so it was probably 5 years ago. And Sheryl Crow actually came out, and they did a rendition of Silver Springs, which was
Nice.
unbelievable. I would love to see James Taylor and Carly Simon get on stage one more time. She's 82, 83. He's coming to town in August at the brand new Coca-Cola Amphitheater. I thought the last time I saw him was out at the one out there, down in Pelham. And by the way, they raised that place. It's no longer there.
It just it's gone.
Yeah, a piece of my heart got dug up with that amphitheater. A lot of people, there's so many great stories when you're talking about a venue. You know, when you're talking about a bar, yeah, is one thing. When you're talking about a venue where so many great stories and so many great entertainers play, when you look about Oak Mountain Amphitheater, I mean, that venue is just unbelievable. But I would love to see, I'd love to hear them do Mockingbird, you know, or I'd love to see her sing Her Town too, which would be,
I'd like to see her be on stage with Mick Jagger singing You're So Vain.
Hey, listen, that would be amazing. I mean, maybe for a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame thing, I don't know, because is Carly in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
I don't think so. Maybe she should be.
You know,
we did a show on that. I don't remember her name being.
You know what? I don't either. Hall of Fame. Hold on. That's because damn it, she should be.
Oh yeah.
Is Carly Simon in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? In 2005, she was nominated for a star in the Hollywood Rock of Fame. She was honored with Founders of the 2022. She was inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Yes.
Oh, she's in. Okay.
Yeah,
good.
So 2022. So how does ABBA? You know, ABBA, and I remember this back in 1988, 89, when I first came to town. At one point, ABBA, the original members, were offered $1 billion to get back together again for a couple of shows. They turned it down, and I remember that. I remember that was a huge news, and I remember thinking to myself, gosh, $1 billion, that's crazy. But they have never gotten back together again.
Wow.
They've done all kinds of things. I know there was a big, wasn't there a Las Vegas show about ABBA?
I think there at one time was, yeah, and I don't remember what it was called. I think it was after one of their song titles. I don't remember.
Yeah, but I think that'd be kind of fun. I know some people, and I'm just kind of looking around. Some people are saying REM would be fun. I'd like to see Steve Perry together with Journey one last time.
Yeah,
I know everyone hates each other. I know Kane and they're having some problems with naming rights with the band.
Come on, people, get over it. You're about to go to the next level.
You know, yeah. And I here's another one, and I've seen them play together before, and it's kind of off again, on again. But they said they will never play together again, which is kind of bums me out. But Hall & Oates,
really?
Yeah. They're so far apart, they hate each other. I mean, it's like, damn it, come on, guys. I mean, you know, it's Hall & Oates. I don't care. You know, what people don't realize is Daryl Hall, and he's no doubt fantastic singer, a great writer, but Oates wrote all those songs.
Yeah.
Oates wrote like so many songs for other bands you wouldn't believe. He wrote songs for the Bee Gees. He wrote songs for Midnight Blue. He wrote all kinds of great songs for Paul Young. He's written just a plethora of fantastic rock and roll songs, including, of course, the Hall & Oates. But I'd love to see for one last time, Hall & Oates one more time on stage. I don't know if it'll ever happen. There's probably no reason to get them back together again, but that'd be a lot of fun. Any other rockers you can think of that you'd love to see back together again?
You know, let's see. I guess I'm trying to think of bands that I like. I know that I don't think they're active anymore, but and I didn't really like the band at the time, but after seeing them, I really got into Aerosmith, and I know they've had a lot of feuds and problems and everything. That would be kind of cool to see. That was one of the great just impromptu shows. I think I've told you before.
Yeah, that's a great story.
We just go down there, and people had bought tickets months in advance. I mean, it had been a hard sell. It was one of those deals where you had to call on the phone and get me one of the first couple thousand people. That's how they used to do it in the old days, kids. Yeah. And there was not a ticket to be had. We went down there and bummed tickets like we always tried to do, and we were getting nothing, Tony. Nobody was going to – everybody had a ticket was going to that show. Mm-hmm. And we knew the Omni so well. We went around the back after the show had already started and knocked on the players' entrance door for the hockey and basketball locker rooms. And a security guard opened the door, and my friend Mark Random, who you've met, he was with me here last year. We were doing some production stuff. Mark says, "Will you let us in?" And he goes, "Man, I can't let you in. What are you talking about?" He said, "We know our way around. You wouldn't just let us in. Nobody's back here. Nobody's paying any attention." He's going, "Oh, man, okay, come on in. And he goes, oh, can my friends, you know, we were like standing off on that. We couldn't believe he was doing that. And next thing we're going through the catacombs of the Omni. We come up right side stage at Aerosmith. We've got friends who are actually into them that have bought seats that are 700 yards away in the upper parts of the nosebleed. And in those days, that was 1974 or five. And I mean, we were right there side stage, and it worked again later on. That we didn't get let in, but we're talking about Fleetwood Mac and the Eagles. They actually played on the same bill in 1977 at the Omni. That was the time we couldn't get into that one either, and we've never failed to get in. But hanging around in the parking lot, getting ready to leave, discouraged, a big limo pulled up. It was like a scene right out of Wayne's World, where the doors opened and a bunch of marijuana smoke came blowing out, which in the 1970s, that was not an unusual event. Now it's a standard procedure. And I think I've told you the story before. This guy kind of stumbles out and goes, hey, guys, what's up? We said, I don't know. And he says, you guys want to go to the show? And we said, yeah. He gets back into the car and comes up with these lanyards. And we got, like, stage access. And awesome. And the awesome. Guard that we were trying to talk into letting us in before, say, you know, I remember Mark strutting by him holding up his thing, like, is this cool, you know? And so we were some real operators, and those are some of the fondest memories of my life. Man, we saw Fleetwood Mac open for the Eagles, if you can believe that.
And that used to be like Oak Mountain Amphitheater. I never had a problem. As long as you knew the guy that was sitting back by the gate, there was one dude sitting on the left-hand side, stage left, sitting on the stage, and he was the one that let the people go in and out of the backstage area, you know, back in the green room and the commissary and all that area. And of course, when you walked back there, you could run into Stevie Ray Vaughan, you could run into Glenn Frey, you could run into whoever was playing that night on the stage. And, I mean, I knew all those guys. And, you know, a $20 bill and a smile and, hey, what's going on, man? And I mean, I would take three or four people with me, and you want to talk about getting some honeys on your arm, man, that would be, hey, you want to go backstage? I mean, that was
outstanding.
That was the deal maker right there. That was, I mean, I could, but I mean, you know, now it's not that I say I wouldn't know these people, but it's just not like it used to be. You know, it used to be able to, used to climb in, and just like my dad used to watch baseball games in a hole in Crosley Fields outfield wall, you just can't do it anymore.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I just thought it was really interesting because a part of me is dying off the last several months with the Oak Mountain Amphitheater dying off, and then Ozzy Osbourne passing away, and I was kind of like, wow, that was huge. And now, of course, the Stevie Nicks stuff coming out, and it's almost like they don't owe us fans anything. They don't. But if they just knew, maybe they do, but I mean, if they just knew how important it would be to see Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham, they don't have to
put any
material or just do like an hour show somewhere. Could you imagine how huge that would be? How much people would love that?
Epic. And you mentioned Ozzy. I've been talking to my son out in Las Vegas. Case was born in 1987. So obviously that was not prime time for Ozzy. But he was doing the Ozfests at the time. And I think I told you on TV, Case went back and for all of his merch and all of his he keeps stuff from all those shows, because he was just a voracious concert goer through all, even starting when he was in like seventh grade up till now. He'd go to a lot more shows now if he wasn't so engaged in his career. Yep. But he went to 11 Ozfests over about a 9-year period. Wow. And I drove him to every one of them. I didn't go. I could be charged with parental abuse. He's 12 or 13 years old. I'd drop him off at 9 o'clock in the morning when the gates open, and I'd pick him up when Ozzy wrapped up his set at 11 p.m. I mean, he was there for 13 hours by himself, but he was such a mature kid, and I knew he wasn't there for any other purpose. He just lived to go from stage to stage on those all-day festivals and see every major performer, and he is, again, born in 1987. He is still absolutely devastated at the loss of Ozzy Osbourne. I mean, he sent me several emails. I mean, it's really hurt his heart. I mean, it's really taken a piece of his time and part of his childhood away, because Ozzy was like a central figure in his love for music. So these guys transcend just what they're famous for. That's what we talked about on the show on TV this last week about Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan completely transformed himself into a cultural icon. That's the same thing Ozzy did, becoming a reality TV star, the most unlikely guy that you could possibly think for that particular thing. But these people are larger than life, literally.
Our good friend Stuart Rome, they're part of the starting lineup, Woodhouse Day Spa, Birmingham.WoodhouseSpas.com, just sent me a picture last night. He scored, I don't know how the hell he did it, but he scored a pair of tickets for Sammy Hagar's birthday bash at Cabo Wabo in Cabo San Lucas. There were there's only like 100 tickets available, and he scored one of the pairs of public tickets. I said, I'm in. He's like, 50 grand, you can go. I was like, geez.
So 50 that's grand?
He does a big special birthday bash down there. But he brought up a story. The first concert he ever saw was he was 9 years old in New Orleans, and he went to see Queen. And his mom dropped him off.
No kidding.
Along with a friend at the age of nine. In downtown New Orleans in the 70s to go see Queen.
Oh, my God.
And I'm thinking to myself, you know, am I crazy here? Like, I got a 13-year-old daughter who's beyond her years. She doesn't look like she's 13. She looks like she's 18. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, if there was a city stages thing going on, could I drop my 13-year-old off along with a friend downtown Birmingham if there were city stages where there's all these people? You know what I mean? I mean, maybe 25 years ago, you wouldn't even think to do something like that because there's 100,000 people down there now. People would go, are you crazy? And I'm like, is it? I don't know. I mean, I don't like leaving her here at the house alone, but she's 13. But back in the day, my mom and dad used to leave me alone all the time.
Is it controversial for me to say that, and I mean absolutely no disrespect by this, but it's different. Sons and daughters are different. I'm sorry. It's just a fact. The predatory situation, the people that are on the prowl for, you know, innocent young girls, is like a million times greater that they're going to get into one incident than a couple of 13 or 14 year old boys. It's just a fact. That doesn't mean that I'm degrading the fact that daughters can't take care of themselves. But girls, it's just like a giant ocean there, and they're like the morsel that's sought after, not some rotten boys.
Dude, go to an Alabama football game on Saturday and just look at what the girls are wearing, okay? And then find a group of them that are just wasted, that aren't wearing any underwear, that don't, and they're just having a good time, and then watch the numbers of guys who are keeping a track of them. It's the creepiest thing in the world.
Oh, yeah.
People that go to football games know exactly what I'm talking about, but you'll see a group of two or three girls who are drunk off their ass, and there'll be like a group of dudes who are casing the joint, and they know they're going to either go, I'm not saying.
And even a lot of the old guys, the binoculars aren't on the field. Their wife is going, that was a great play.
These are 20-year-olds.
Yeah, exactly. Half the binoculars in the stadium are on those sections. So
different show for
it's just
time,
a fact of life. I mean, again, in this to even have to preface that with this might be controversial that girls and boys are different in terms of the draw to them as opposed to the other. You know, and there's plenty of perverts to go around for every proclivity.
There's more perverts now than, and a lot of people say, well, it's just it's different. It is different now, and I'll tell you what it is: the internet blew it up. If you wanted to go see something naked, you actually had to go to a store and you had to buy a magazine. First of all, you had to take a deep breath and swallow hard and go get that Playboy or go to Tooties or wherever you used to go get your stuff. It wasn't available everywhere. Now, if I want to go see that, I can do that. I can do it while we're doing the show right now. And back in the 70s and 80s, you couldn't do that. And because of that, we have desensitized ourselves to sexuality, to nudity, and it's still as wrong as it's ever been, but there's a lot more creeps out there than there is.
Yeah, and like you said, it's the patrons themselves. I've never been so shocked in my life, and I'm not a purist prude. That's what I was looking for. But when Case was 13, he wanted to go see Korn at the Kansas Coliseum, and I said, "I'm not dropping you off at Korn. I'm not doing that." So I bought a ticket for myself and sat up in the nosebleed section. He was down on the in front of the stage, people would call it a mosh pit, but it wasn't a mosh pit. He called it hardcore dancing. But basically, Tony, it was guys just running full speed into each other and just slamming them each other to the ground and stuff. And he did that for 3.5 hours while I sat up in the nosebleed section. But the entire concert, all the camera crews and stuff up on the big screen, it was teenage girls taking their shirts off. Yeah. I mean, it was. I just couldn't believe we've reached that stage now where girls in high school are just bearing it all at a corn concert.
Yep. And now you got some bands actually calling out for it, because if you start grabbing stuff, well, I mentioned the fact that Ozzy Osbourne show was one of the most debauchery-filled shows I've ever been to, and I was like, it was unbelievable. I mean, what I saw in that concert. All right, any other bands you can think of? Man, I love talking rock and roll with you. Any other bands
I think they've done it once or twice, but you know, Paul McCartney is touring again. And I know Ringo is just the weirdest guy in the world. I don't know if you've seen any recent Ringo. Speaking of guys out of their generation, my youngest son, Clayt, who's 33, Clayt is obsessed with Ringo because Ringo posts these bizarre videos all the time. And his big thing is, peace and love, everybody, peace and love. If anybody sends me any more stuff to sign as of August 1st, this is like 2 years ago, I am not signing it. I'm not sending it back. It's going straight in the trash can. Leave me alone. Peace and love. Peace you know, love. He's just such a weird dude.
He's but he looks really good, by the way. I'm sitting here.
Oh, he really does. You would not know he was pushing.
He's got 80. He's got a brand new album out.
Unbelievable. But McCartney on this tour, Ringo just to come out and just do whatever, you know, for them to play like one Beatles song, even one of Ringo's, he can play Octopus's Garden or something, or Little Help from My Friends or whatever that song was called.
Oh, his new album is a country album, by the way.
Oh yeah. I knew he had made that transition. So, I mean, wouldn't that be appropriate? You know, the two surviving members of the most iconic band of all time. I don't know what their relationship, I don't think they have a stormy relationship, but it would certainly be nice to see Ringo make some appearances on this McCartney tour.
Ringo's playing the Venetian September 25th, actually September 17th, 19th and 20th, the Venetian Las Vegas.
Oh, I'm just going to miss that. I'm going to be out there the first week of September and the first week of October. So
he'll be back on September 24th and 26th.
Oh man. So Ringo, peace and love.
Yeah, I mean, he's 80. He's 82 and 83, something like that.
Yeah, it's gotta be.
Yeah, he's got guys from Mr. playing the band. I know Todd Rundgren for a while was playing with the band. Yeah, a little Ringo Starr and his friends released with a little help from my friends to support those impacted by the California wildfires.
How about that?
That's pretty crazy stuff. If you get a chance to go see Ringo Starr, it really, really is good. It's fun because you get to hear music from every individual band that part of. So if you want to hear Kyrie or whatever, it's super cool.
Well, we've talked about Vegas being such an iconic place for sports now that it's just blown up. If you're a sports fan, it's just overload. But if you're a music fan, this whole concept of residencies is really awesome.
It really is.
Because you get about a 2 or 3 week period. Our good friend we just met, you introduced us to by having Chris Fryer, Zach Brown Band is going to be at the Sphere playing over 2 weekends, and now the tickets have been so well received, and they ain't cheap. They've added 2 more shows the first week of January, so they're going to play 3 consecutive weeks basically in Las Vegas. That's just phenomenal.
All right, so we're going to Vegas. We're going to be going to Florence, Alabama. What else are we doing?
Aruba.
We're going to go Aruba. We're also going to be going to Cabo to see Sammy's birthday.
Oh, yeah. I'll say it. I said it before, and I'll say it again. When I grow up, I want to be Stuart Rome.
Yeah. I do, too. All right, my man. Till this weekend, ABC 3340. We're 3 weeks. Right, 3 weeks. August 23rd, Dublin.
The Dublin Bowl.
August 23rd. So we're inside.
How many people in Dublin who have tickets to that game have any idea where Iowa and Kansas are?
That'd be interesting to see what ticket prices are in Dublin for a college football game. I wonder
I know we're all over the place here, but that's what we do. Yeah. I get Notre Dame and Navy playing there. I get Notre Dame playing anybody there because they're Irish, they're the Fighting Irish, for God's sake. Last year, Florida State, Georgia Tech, that was a little bit of a stretch. But Iowa State, Kansas State, I mean, good grief. And amazingly too, look at what happened to Florida State last year. They got shocked there by Georgia Tech, came back home and lost two straight home games. These teams are coming back, Tony, and playing the very next set weekend.
Oh, I know it.
And that's insane.
They're going to be banged up, yeah.
If
and
you've ever traveled internationally,
that may be one of the best Big 12 games this year too, by the way.
Oh, I know, because they're both have good teams. But talk about two obscure universities. My goodness, why?
No doubt.
I'm surprised. Who's going to go next year? Is it going to be like New Mexico and Nevada, Reno? I mean, I just I send some marquee teams.
Hey, UAB is looking for a trip.
Yeah, that would be a good windfall for our buddy Mark Ingram. But I don't think you're going to see the SEC and Big Ten send teams to that because they're making enough money now. These other leagues that aren't getting the big paydays are on board with the TV networks getting that big score. But I don't think you're going to see the real marquee teams. I don't think you're going to see Alabama or Ohio State or Notre Dame went because, again, Notre Dame should host a game every year there. That would make perfect sense.
I would agree with you. All right, till this weekend, my friend.
All right, Tony. Enjoyed it.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.